Back when I was in community college, I worked at this pizza place that was basically in the middle of nowhere. It was located in a strip mall at the side of a highway in a pretty rural area, and there were just people dotted around the surrounded area that the store never quite went out of business. But since we hardly made any money, we operated a skeleton crew at all hours, and especially late at night. Sometimes it would just be two people in the store, me and one other guy. One would make the pies, the other would drive them out to the customers. It wasn't always a perfect system, but we managed. Without a doubt, the best time to work was Wednesday or Thursday nights, simply because of how quiet it was. You worked a Wednesday or Thursday late shift and basically got paid to sit around on your butt and talk trash with your coworker. You'd maybe get one or two calls, nothing stressful, and that was that. But this one night, we get a call almost bang on 11 p.m., a half hour before closing. Any other time, we might actually be kind of angry, but it was just way too out of the ordinary for us to even be mad. Like, I think it was legit the first time we'd ever gotten a call that late. Now, at the time, my coworker is out in his car having a quick smoke before we start our clean down, so I'm all on my own when I hear the phone. Part of me was like, just don't answer it, dude. But honestly, curiosity got the best of me. Most of the families in the county work their farms, so they go to bed pretty early in the evening, so who was calling so late? When I pick up, I don't recognize the voice on the end. Given the nature of the job, I pretty much know everyone who calls, along with exactly what they're going to order. But still, it's not entirely unusual that we get someone new calling. But what was really unusual was how this guy's order differed from most others, not to mention how he was acting in general. So right off the bat, I can tell there's something not quite right with the guy. His voice was super raspy, like he lived in a whiskey still and smoked Marlboros for breakfast. And I know it's about to be a weird call when the first thing he asks for is a hamburger. I'm like, sir, this is a pizza place. I can read you our menu if you'd like. Which was no problem. We only had like six different pizzas with a couple of sides. The guy says it's fine. All he wants is hamburger meat. I'm assuming he meant on a pizza, since we did actually do a cheeseburger pizza at the time, so I asked some clarification. But no, this guy doesn't want a pizza. He just wants hamburger meat. Raw hamburger meat. I don't even know if I'm allowed to sell raw hamburger meat. Like, I know you can eat raw hamburger meat. Like, I'm pretty sure that's what steak tartare is, but I figured there had to be some kind of food hygiene law against it. I asked my coworker, who was way too blazed to give me a solid answer, so I give the guy an honest answer and tell him I'm not even sure I'm allowed to sell him raw hamburger. The guy started begging and pleading so hard that I was actually speechless for a moment. He sounded like he was fiending for it, so bad that it was actually kind of creepy. I'm even less sure about the whole thing by that point, but after the guy on the phone offers a handsome tip, I make an executive decision and decided to go ahead with the sale. People do dumb stuff for money, right? Well, I suppose this is my thing. I throw what I consider to be $10 retail worth of hamburger meat into a plastic carton, plug this guy's address into my navigation system, then began the drive out to his house. I've been making deliveries in that area of Lawrence County for about 18 months at that time. I'm not saying I knew the place like the back of my hand, but I'd certainly never seen this guy's house before. I didn't even know that old place was there. It was some old farmhouse at the end of a long dirt road, and it looked like it was falling apart. It would have made a great haunted house, and all I could think as my headlights suddenly lit the whole place up was that it was like the start of a horror movie or something. I was the poor, dumb pizza boy, doomed to die in the film's intro that introduced whatever crazed killer or monstrous creature that was the movie's main feature. I park up, walk up the old rickety porch, and since there was no sign of a doorbell, I just knock on this guy's door. When he answers, he actually looks pretty normal. Like he'd expect some decrepit old witch to answer the door to a house like that. Not a guy in a sweater vest who looked like the dad of all dads. As I'm handing over the bag of hamburger meat, I can't resist asking him why he'd ordered raw hamburger and not an actual menu item. I figured he's going to grill it at home or whatever, so I frame my question as such. But the guy just smiles, shakes his head, and tells me he's going to eat it raw. I must have completely failed to hide the look of disgusted confusion on my face, because the guy then launches into this big speech about the benefits of eating raw meat. I mean, he talked a lot of science terms that I didn't understand, but he seemed to know what he was talking about, and it actually weirdly put me at ease for a second as he fished around his wallet for a tip. He hands me $11 in crumpled ones, and as I count them, I'm like, "Thanks, man. That's really generous." But then I look up, just in time to see the guy crack the lid on the plastic container of meat, bring it up to his nose, and take a long, deep sniff of what was inside. The way he acted wasn't like this wholesome, smells yummy kind of happy. It seems straight up perverse. I'm just watching, trying not to freak out, as the smell of the meat seems to legit turn him on. After he huffs it, he shudders, eyes rolling in their sockets before he gets this glazed look in them, and all I'm thinking is, this is my cue to leave. I awkwardly thank the guy, just happy to get off of his property, only right as I go to turn around and walk back off the porch, I see something moving in the dimly lit hallway over the dude's shoulder. Poking out at about waist height from behind a doorframe was this big pair of terrified eyes looking back at me from sunken sockets. It was a kid. I don't even know what compelled me to ask, but whatever it was so strong that it overrode any desire I had to flee while I still had the legs to carry me. I remember saying something like, "That your kid, huh?" Instead of giving me this big smile or waxing lyrical about what a proud dad they were, something that would have suited his wholesome sweater vest dad look, he suddenly looks furious. He spins around on the spot. The kid looks terrified and disappears from view, then when he turns back, he just stares at me, this deep, moody stare that sent a shiver down my spine. And once again, I get that overwhelming, this is my cue to leave feeling. I thank the guy, backing off the porch in a way where I never quite turn my back on him. He doesn't say a word in response, just keeps that angry look on his face, like I'd done something to offend him or seen something I shouldn't have. It took 20 minutes to drive back to the pizza place. 20 long minutes I had to replay the interaction in my head, over and over again. I called 911 as soon as I got back, like I had no idea what was going on back there, but it couldn't have been good. No kid should be that scared of their dad, if that guy even was that kid's dad at all. My logic was that I could call 911, find out I just came out at a bad time and took the dude's actions out of context and maybe feel a little embarrassed. Or find out that something horrible was happening in that house, feel horrendous guilt that I failed to stop it, and then be haunted for the rest of my life. Though what I wasn't expecting was that there was actually a third option, one that turned out to be worse than the first two. So, I call the cops. They go to check it out. Then the deputy gets back in touch to reassure me that he'd been over to the guy's house, had a good look around, and then found that there was nothing wrong. I figured that once a cop had told me that, I'd feel fine. Kind of stupid for assuming stuff, but generally fine. But I didn't. I found myself just not believing the guy. Like he couldn't have seen the same stuff that I had and just walked away being like, "Yeah, it's all good in that house." I didn't do another delivery to that house for the rest of the time I worked there, and I certainly wasn't complaining about not having to make any more weird deliveries. But even today, I find myself wondering what the deal was with that guy and his kid, and whether or not I should have done more to investigate. Because the thing that haunts me the most is that there might be some kind of kid out there going through the most horrifying ordeal of their young lives, thinking like, "Why didn't that man help me? Why didn't that man help me?" So I'm pretty sure there are identical services in America, but over here in England, you can get your supermarket of choice to deliver your shopping or groceries directly to your home. After you make your order, some hard-working, handsome, diligent driver person will load your food into a van, drive it out to you, and personally deliver them with a smile. And if you're lucky enough to live in Nottingham, then that handsome driver person might well be me. Since the whole pandemic thing started, the number of people using Asda's delivery service has shot up. In the run-up to Christmas, I worked 8 days straight, from 7 in the morning to 8 in the evening, with hardly any kind of break to keep me sane. It was exhausting, completely and utterly exhausting, and that's the insane level of fatigue I was feeling that takes the blame for the story I have for you today. So, as I'm making quite a large delivery one night, and the roads are pretty quiet, I see blue flashing lights in my rearview mirror. I give it a few seconds and the lights are still behind me, so obviously I pull over to the side of the road to await further instructions. It's about then that I realize that it's not a normal looking police car. It's unmarked, just this plain looking Renault Clio, and the guy that got out of the driver's side was wearing just regular civilian clothes. I lower my window to see the guy flashing a badge and an ID at me, but he's wearing a face mask for COVID, so it's not like I can see who it actually is anyway. But when the guy says drug squad and asks for my driver's license, I obviously comply. Undercover police are a thing after all, and a city like Nottingham has a lot of drug crime, so I didn't think anything of the guy being in his own clothes. The guy runs a check on my ID, then explains that a big drug gang has been using professional couriers to ferry product around, and that he and his partner might need to search my rear storage. Obviously, I tell them I'll do anything I can to help, so I mask up, get out of the cab, and open up the rear storage of my van so the police can look around. As soon as the rear doors are open, I notice that the plainclothes officer who climbs into the back is being really rough with some of the produce. I don't say anything at first. I mean, I wouldn't dare start lecturing a policeman on how to do his job, especially when they were hot on the tail of some drug gang and seemed pretty agitated about it. His partner then asked me if he can search the cab of my van, so I open it up for him, and he too starts rummaging around the glove box and stuff, being just as rough and inconsiderate as the officer in the back. Again, I'm quite annoyed by this, and I wander around the back of the van to see how things are getting on, only to find the officer searching back there is in the process of basically ransacking the contents. He's shoving things off shelves, tossing fragile items out the back door. It was outrageous behavior. I finally find it in me to speak up and ask the officer in quite a loud but polite tone to please not be so rough with the produce. "Shut your mouth," was always said in reply, without skipping a beat too. It was such a rude response that I was actually a little bit dumbstruck for a second. I dealt with some impatient police officers before, but this was something else entirely. I tell him there's no need for that kind of attitude, as I am being perfectly cooperative. But by that point, his colleague has joined me after searching the cab and decides to play the good side of this good cop, bad cop routine. He apologizes for the inconvenience, assures me of the importance of their work, and then says that he has to search me too, since I might be hiding something on me. By then, I was already late for my scheduled delivery, so that ship had sailed, so I figured I might as well just be a good little citizen and continue to help the police as much as I could. So then right there, parked up on a dark, deserted street, this masked-up officer starts frisking my pants and jacket for anything I should have on me. It was just like a routine stop and search at first, nothing out of the ordinary, but then the bloke asked me to take off my jacket so he can search it more thoroughly. Bear in mind, it's absolutely freezing out, so I'm not best pleased, but I still comply. He pats it down a bit, tosses it to the side, then tells me to take off my shoes. I shoot him this confused look, and he starts telling me how I could easily hide drugs or money inside my footwear. I'm coming to the end of my tether, but I do as I'm told, and that's when it all goes downhill. The police officer has my shoes in my hands. He walks around the back of me and starts putting me in cuffs. He tries to assure me that I'm just being detained and I'll be uncuffed once the search is completed, but his explanation does nothing for my nerves. I feel trapped. I'm starting to panic and I'm starting to realize that something is horribly wrong with this whole encounter. I'm freezing. I got no shoes on. This police officer is leaning me back towards the van, and I'm just on the verge of kicking off. Then right as I say something about getting their badge numbers to make a complaint, the officer escorting me back towards the van shoves me to the ground and says something like, "Will you bollocks, mate?" I couldn't believe what was happening. Or maybe it was just that I didn't want to believe what was happening. Because as I get dragged back to my feet by an officer who has suddenly lost all airs of professionalism, it dawns on me that these two policemen aren't exactly who they say they are. And that's when the raw fear kicked in. Like I said, I'm handcuffed, freezing and shoeless, completely at these blokes' mercy, and to make matters worse, they start asking me questions that they're not liking the answers to. They start asking me where the money is, and I don't realize what they're asking for at first. And as if they still thought I was some kind of drug courier or something to that effect, I'm telling them that I don't know what they're talking about, that it's all online these days and there's no cash in the van. They responded by throwing me into the refrigerated rear storage unit, threatening to lock the doors behind them. Now most delivery drivers who have these kinds of cold storage have the means to unlock the door, should they ever get trapped inside. But I'm handcuffed and my jacket with the keys in it is just lying at the side of the road. If they'd shut the doors on me, I might not be around to tell this story. I beg them not to shut the doors, and I know how pathetic I must have sounded because they just responded by bursting out laughing at me, mimicking my pleading in a horrifying display of cruelty and viciousness. They responded by pulling me out of the unit, me hitting the tarmac so hard I think I dislocated my shoulder, before absolutely kicking the life out of me as I was laying there groaning. It was hands down the most terrifying few minutes of my life, and now that I look back on it, I think that's exactly what they wanted. I mean, why rob a bloody supermarket delivery truck? I'm not exactly an armored bank car, am I? They weren't stupid blokes either. The one I spoke to the most had this way about him, really made me think he was a legit policeman, you know? So why target me? Simple. Because they knew I could be easily intimidated. I was a soft target, one that they could just toy with to get their rocks off. They could just pull over some bloke in a Beamer, take all his cash, or maybe an electrical truck or something if they wanted to make some money. But me, I wasn't work. I was pleasure. They did what they did that evening because it was fun for them. And honestly, that's what scares me the most. The creation of apps like Uber Eats, DoorDash, and Postmates marked the dawn of a new age in food delivery services. 10 years ago, pink-eyed teenagers everywhere envisioned a day when they could get McDonald's delivered to their smoky apartment doors. Yet now, what was nothing more than a munchies-induced fantasy has become a concrete reality, creating new means of employment as well as satisfying appetites all over the country. For one of these newly employed delivery drivers, Sonia King, a DoorDash driver's account gave her the ability to plan her work around her busy home life. She could log on during a public holiday, Cinco de Mayo for example, and watch the cash roll in as she delivered tacos, burritos, and enchiladas all over the city of Atlanta, Georgia. But little did Sonia know that the first job of the day would be her last, and would involve a brush with death that left her shaken and traumatized. The 31-year-old mother of four was making a routine delivery at the time of the incident and hadn't previously encountered any kind of trouble while she was on the job. But on that particular occasion, she got out of her car, grabbed the food delivery from her passenger seat, only to find herself face to face with a man by the name of Rick Painter. Sonia said that at first, Rick seemed like a perfectly normal guy. He had requested the food delivery be dropped off on a counter inside of his house, which was an unusual request, but one Sonia had no problem adhering to. Some disabled customers have special requests they make of delivery drivers, who are often only too happy to accommodate them. Besides, the house looked perfectly well maintained and non-threatening, and as Sonia later put it, anyone would have gone inside. But when she entered the house, and it came to Rick giving her a tip, Sonia found that her customer was anything but normal. As Rick thanked Sonia for dropping the food off and pulled out a $5 bill from his wallet, he looked her up and said, "Oh, by the way, I'm Jesus." Sonia was thrown off guard by this bizarre comment, and it took a moment for it to register that it was what he actually said. But when the penny dropped that this apparently perfectly normal guy was comparing himself to a prophet, Sonia began to get nervous. She says Rick then shot her a look that gave away how horribly unhinged he was, a kind of predatory smile that sent shivers down her spine, and she knew it was time for her to leave. Only Rick wasn't about to let her leave, as he had other things in mind for her. At this point, it's important to note that Sonia is a practicing Muslim and wears the full face covering, more commonly known as a niqab. Whether or not it was the visual cue to set Rick off and made him allude to himself as Jesus, we can't possibly speculate. But the fact of the matter is that when Rick decided to attack the terrified Sonia, he chose to do so in the most disrespectful way possible. He pulled her niqab from her head, wrapped it around her throat, and began choking her with it. He then grabbed Sonia by the hair and tried to use his grip to apply even more force to her throat. "He's grabbing me and trying to choke me with my own niqab," I kept telling the man. "I've got kids." In the midst of me fighting him, "He's grabbing my head," Sonia later said. "He thought he was Jesus, but Jesus wouldn't do that to nobody. I was just rolling around and trying to pry off certain fingers, but he would not let my hair go," she continued. "I stuck my finger in his eye. He would not let my hair go. It was definitely about to be a murder, and it was going to be me." As Sonia fought for her life, she found she was able to get a grip of her car keys and began using them to jab them into Rick Painter's face over and over again. "I didn't want to stab anybody," she insisted, "but I had to do it because I kept seeing my kids flashing before my eyes, and I kept seeing my husband and thinking, I gotta get out of this house so I can go home to my family." Time and time again, the sharp ends of Sonia's car keys ripped into Rick's flesh, and his mugshot photo shows him with some seriously horrifying injuries, all inflicted by Sonia. They look incredibly painful and must have been agony to endure at the time of the attack, but disturbingly, Rick seemed to react in a completely different way to what we might expect. Instead of yelling or growling in pain as he was being repeatedly stabbed in the face, Rick began to make noises that turned Sonia's blood to ice. It sounded like he was enjoying it, like the pain was doing less than wholesome things for him. Rick let out a long, slow groan before mumbling, "Ah, this feels good." Somehow, Sonia managed to pry a couple of Rick's fingers free from her hair before slipping out from her niqab in a way that allowed her a window of escape. She bolted back to her car, gunned the engine, and drove away from her unexpected brush with death as quickly as she could. It's almost a miracle that she was able to do so with nothing but cuts and bruises, and if her attacker had put a little more planning and precision into the ambush, there's only a slim chance Sonia would have walked out alive. Not long after the attack, Rick Painter was arrested by the Atlanta Police Department, and his detention kicked off legal proceedings that ended in him being given a 2-year prison sentence on charges of false imprisonment and misdemeanor battery. Sonia might have gotten some small measure of justice from the attack, but knowing Rick will be back on the streets in just 2 years is something that terrifies her. "I've become very distant with a lot of people that I love now. I don't trust people. I expect the worst to happen," she said. The scary thing is, the harrowing experience that Sonia endured isn't all that rare, as attacks on food delivery drivers have been steadily rising over the past 5 years or so. Delivery drivers in London are finding that their distinctive Uber Eats branded bags and waterproofs are making them a target for robberies. In several violent instances, drivers were knocked off their bikes or mopeds, either by flying kicks or by being hit by a car, before a gang descends on them to relieve the injured party of their valuables. The scale of the problem is hard to assess because police forces don't yet gather statistics on it, and the companies themselves don't publish any. Sonia King personally thinks that DoorDash should do more to protect its 400,000 couriers, such as background checks to identify customers with criminal records. Rick Painter had been in and out of prison for other violent offenses, and Sonia says that if she'd known that, she wouldn't have been so quick to take the job. She also complains that after the attack, she wasn't able to speak to anyone from the San Francisco company. She could only email them, and that it was 3 days before anyone actually called to check on her. "I almost died, and this is the way they treat me," she added. "It was just disgusting." DoorDash says it sincerely regrets the handling of Sonia's case, that they take the safety of their drivers extremely seriously and do not tolerate any form of harassment or inappropriate behavior. DoorDash added that it has now introduced a free occupational accident insurance policy for all of its U.S. drivers, but for some, the move is too little, too late. "But despite all we do to ensure the safety and security of our fellow man, what we can't prevent is certain individuals' twisted desire to hunt and hurt perfectly innocent people. People who abuse the ever-growing service economy to prey on those desperate to make a living. People like that will always find a way to slip through the net. And the horrifying fact is that, no matter what we do, we'll never be completely safe, no matter where we are or what we're doing." So, I had this part-time job when I was in high school, working as a pizza delivery driver for a large pizza chain. I saw some pretty wild stuff on the job, but only one thing that actually seriously creeped me out. I'm making this routine delivery to some innocuous-looking house, but when the guy answers the door, he just sort of grabs the pizza, thrusts a fistful of ones in my face, then slams the door behind him. At first, I'm just like, rude. But then when I count the money, I find that not only has this guy not given me enough for his 20-inch meat lovers, but he's not even bothered to tip me. I'd been burned once or twice before when it came to my count, and the difference ended up coming out of my wages, so I was not about to let that nonsense happen a third time. I ended up banging on the guy's door for like a solid 5 minutes before he answered. Like, I could see him moving around behind the frosted glass panel, but totally ignoring my knocking. In the end, I lose my temper and say something like, "Hey man, don't try and finesse me out of money. I don't want to have to call the cops, but I will." Boom. Those were the magic words. He comes right up to the front door and opens it up. Not all the way, maybe a third of the way open. This guy is saying sorry a whole lot. Like, almost too much. He's all pale, he's sweating, his hands are shaking as he passes me out a 20, just laying the sorry the whole time. I'm just thinking, what's this guy's problem? But then I catch a glimpse of something in the hallway behind the guy, and suddenly I've got a good idea what the guy's deal was. There's a dark red stain on the wooden floor, maybe the size of a manhole cover, and next to it are what look like all kinds of different cleaning products. I take one quick look at that, then at the guy, and he just slams the door in my face. I'm back in my car and speeding back to the pizza place faster than you can say F that. As soon as I get there, I call the cops. As it turned out, I had legit interrupted this guy cleaning up a murder. And from what I heard, the guy was having an affair with a high school girl that was like 30 years his junior. She's over at his place while his wife is out of town, orders pizza at some point, then before it even arrives, the guy kills her because she's threatening to ruin his marriage or something. He had no clue that she'd ordered the pie, panics when I show up at the door, and that's how he got caught. Crazy story, right? But for me, the craziest part isn't so much the whole murderous infidelity thing. It's that before she was murdered, this girl unwittingly kicked off a chain of events that would catch her own killer. I had to go to court a bunch of times too, since I was basically the case's star witness, and it was so freaky seeing that guy looking at me when I talked to the prosecutor. He'd literally killed a girl with his own hands, and there he was, giving me death stares. Like I said, I've seen some wild stuff working pizza delivery, but only one thing that gave me nightmares. That guy's eyes.